Avos Perek Dalet Mishnah Tes Zayin for 16, and in some Mishnayos it's for 13. We have here Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda was also one of the five students, the later students of Rabbi Akiva, one of the five who got smicha then from Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. He lived, it was called the third generation of Tanaim, like the others here, meaning we're talking about after the Bar Kokhba revolts, and after things began to settle down, many of the Talmid Chacham were in hiding, including Rabbi Yehuda, like Rishon ben Gamliel, the Nasi of that period. And as things calmed down, they reestablished the Sanhedrin no longer in Yavne, which was closed, but in Usha. Okay, Usha was a city. It's a city about 15 kilometers, 10 miles southeast of modern-day Haifa. And there it was reestablished. Now, Usha was the hometown of Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, and he was a prominent figure there, and a prominent figure in general. Rabbi Yehuda is mentioned more than anybody else in the Mishnayos, more than 600 times he gets mentioned. So he's obviously an important Tana of that period. Very importantly, he was the early Rebbe of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the author of the Mishnah. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi initially studies under his father, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the Nasi, but later on he goes to learn under Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And he goes on from there to learn by others as well. But the point is, this is his early first Rebbe. Rabbi Yehuda, as called the Rosh HaMedabrim, the first of the speakers, he was accorded that honor. He was like the lead speaker amongst the Tanaim of this period. Obviously one of the Gedolei Hador in his time. Notably, he was especially poor. Rabbi Yehuda, there's an anecdote in the Gemara which I find especially, you know, poignant, which is that his wife once made like a robe that they shared. When she had to go to market, she put the robe on. When he went to the Beis Midrash, he wore the robe. So that's how poor they were. And these are generally terrible times for the Jewish people after the Bar Kokhba revolt and just the terrible Roman oppression. And in general, there was also just poverty, famine, drought, locusts, all the above happening there in the first half of the second half of the second century of the Common Era. So these were tough times. Anyways, now, what I'm saying now is interesting, this Mishnah per se. The Mishnah here, which says, Hevi Zahir B'Talmud, be careful with your learning, Sheshigas Talmud Ola Zadon, because an accidental, inadvertent mistake in the context of Talmud counts as if it were Zadon, it was intentional. So just what was going on in their time, just in terms of the learning? So Rabbi Yehuda, who, like I said, is in the generation before the Mishnah. So effectively, that means you have nothing written down. People, of course, did have private notes, but that's not really relevant, right? For our purposes here, there was nothing written down. And therefore, what people did largely was they memorized like traditions from teacher to student. Those things they memorized would look ultimately like what we have in the Mishnah, the Mishnayos. And in addition, they darshan the psukim, pasuk by pasuk, creating what we call the halachic midrash, if you will. The Rabbi Yehuda, was a very important player in the halachic midrash process. The Sifra, which is also known as the Toras Kohanim, it's the halachic midrashim on Sefer Vayikra, essentially is him. And was every stam, non-attributed sentence of the Sifra is Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so that is sort of what he was doing. And so what happens is everyone's sort of memorizing these traditions, nothing's written down. And then, kind of like the same way you probably remember, there's all sorts of songs that you used to sing to the radio in your youth. And you probably, if I told you, can you tell me that song, you would remember, you'd say, I don't know the words. But actually, if you hear it on the radio in 1 second, you'll remember every single word. And then as you sing, you're like, wow, that song really, I didn't realize those were the words. Even though you knew them, but you didn't really think about them, and you didn't realize how maybe inappropriate they were, whatever the story is. So the same kind of thing. These people are memorizing oral traditions. When they're young, they're essentially just, you know, memorizing machines, being stuffed like an ox, as Chazal put it. And then afterwards, after they do all the memorization, they have to then sort of now, and they've got it all down, then they'll sort of unpack it and think about it. That process of unpacking, of analyzing, of thinking, of questioning, of clarifying, the oral tradition, that's called Talmud. That's what he means here in this sentence. The same way, our Talmud Bavli has two parts. You have a Mishnah, and then every Mishnah is followed by a Gemara. The Gemara is doing the process of Talmud. It's doing the process of thinking about that Mishnah and saying, wait, what's the source of this Mishnah? How do you reconcile it with other traditions? you know, other opinions, what's the rationale and what's the reason behind it. So that process is called the process of Talmud. And what Rabbi Yehuda here is saying, and he's talking really to Morei Hora'ah, you know, rabbis and Dayan and the like, that you need to be, it's your responsibility, this is your job, to ensure that the tradition that you've received, just you don't just memorize it, you don't have it, you know, that you can spit it back, but that you understand it. You understand its rationale, its basis, how it can be applied, how it should be applied, and so on. And that is the process of Talmud. And he's warning people here, saying, listen, if you're part of this process of maintaining the oral tradition, again, nothing's written down, no Mishnah, so then it's your responsibility as the Talmud Chacham to exert yourself in Talmud, clarifying everything. Because if you end up making a mistake in terms of your teaching or your ruling, so then you can't just say, oops, no, that's not, there's no such thing as oops in this context. You're considered to be grossly negligent in your responsibilities, and therefore you're amazed. In other words, when it comes to culpability in Jewish laws, I'm sure you know there are two basic categories, shogeg and mazed. Shogeg means it was an inadvertent violation, didn't intend to violate the law, whereas mazed means you knew it was wrong, but you did it anyways. So what we're saying here is that one's failure to do Talmud and clarify his oral traditions, if he is going to be then teaching other people and passing shilas, ruling on halachic matters, acting as a dayan. So if he makes a mistake because he didn't clarify his tradition well enough, he didn't do Talmud as he should have, so therefore there's no such thing as an excuse saying, oops, it was inadvertent, it was shogeg. No. The an accidental inadvertent mistake, ola zadon, it counts as a intentional mistake because it's gross negligence, since that's your responsibility. If you fail to do it, you're held fully accountable because you're essentially making a kink or a break in the tradition, right? That's bad news. You're ruling incorrectly. And then, even though the other competing streams that will have different opinions, you've now created like an incorrect, a link in the chain. And that sort of can't be repaired. So that's in a way like kind of unforgivable. So that is considered to be zadon. It's your responsibility as a mora hora, as a teacher, to do Talmud and clarify everything that you learned to make sure you understand it and have no further questions. If you have questions, you should ask them.